So with those reminders, I think I have reached the end of our technical overview here on how to participate. So I think at this point, I'm going to invite Emmy Laiha to come on video and unmute herself to provide an overview to this ongoing series. Emmy?
Sure, thank you so much, Jean. Again, thank you to everyone for joining us today. I want to take a second of your time to talk about the Federal Facilities Academy, of which you are participating in today with this webinar. So the Academy was created to really address the nuances of federal facility cleanups. It's still CERCLA, but there are some very specific differences that come to our federal facilities. So we've created a series of webinars that really hone in on these topics and discuss them in more detail. It is a voluntary program. However, if you finish all 11 webinars and take the 3-day in-person training, you qualify for a certificate of completion. And that's issued by our federal facilities director at EPA. And we copy your management so that they're aware you are going above and beyond the required training to better understand how to implement CERCLA at our federal facility sites. Again, it's voluntary, but glad that you all are here and really encourage you to take a look at the other webinars.
All right, thanks, Emmy. And so I think we're gonna move on here and just remind everyone on how they can receive participation and document or get credits for attending these sessions. So as Emmy just highlighted, this series is part of an ongoing classroom and online series. So there are 11 webinars in total that we're hosting here on CLUIN, which are open to the public, and one classroom delivery, which is limited to only EPA states, tribes, and other federal agencies. You may participate in the 11 online webinars, either taking the live classes, just like we're doing right now when we host them online, or replaying recorded versions that will be made available for each of these 11 sessions. And then as Emmy highlighted, for the in-person training, you must participate that session in person in order to get credit. For each of the individual online webinars that we'll be hosting, you can receive an individual participation certificate, which will document your attendance in any or all of the 11 online sessions. And you can get one of those certificates for attending them live or for replaying them. So you can take them all 11 lives, all 11 replayed, some combination of online and then replay. And you'll do that by simply submitting feedback for each of the sessions that you attend or replay to get a participation certificate. I'll give more instructions on how to do that for today's session later on. And then as Emmy noted, if you're able to do all 11 online in either live or by replaying them, and then you qualify and participate for that in-person delivery, you'll receive a full Academy certificate indicating that you've done all of the courses that are part of this series. So with that set of reminders, Emmy, I think it's time to call up presentation materials on your end and get the class started.
Sure, just one second while I get that on screen. All right.
All right, everything looks great. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. All right, again, welcome to everybody. This is our Federal Facilities Academy course on RCRA and CERCLA integration at federal facilities. My name is Emmy Laiha. I'm with the Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office at EPA, and we're very happy to be bringing this topic to you all today. So before we jump into the slides, I'd really like to get a sense of who's joining us today. So we have a poll, and we're just asking, have you ever worked at a site that integrated RCRA and CERCLA at a federal facility?
All right, so Emmy, this is our first poll today, so I'll remind any of our new attendees that you should see a pop-up window floating with the question, and there'll be a circular button next to each of those options that you can click to select that response and then hit the submit button. I can see how many you have voted, so about 2/3 of you have submitted a response, which is great. For anybody on a mobile device, you might need to look for the three dots menu and then access the poll under more options. But as I'm saying that, we're almost over 75%, and remember, the more of you participate, the more fun this gets. So I'm going to go ahead and lock this poll down now, stop accepting responses, and share those results. So Emmy, as I'm looking at it, more than half of them have at least been involved in some sites that have done this. Some of them, 12%, have done many sites where this has worked. And then a lot of people, about 1/3, have not.
Very interesting. Okay, thank you to everybody who participated. It just gives us a better sense of who's in the audience. Very interested that a few of you have worked on this at many sites. That's hopefully will be great for any Q&A we do during the webinar today. All right, so just continuing on with our slides, a quick overview. We're going to go over some background information, and we do have another instructor that's going to provide a RCRA perspective. We'll talk about some legal lessons that have come from RCRA and CERCLA disagreements, so to speak. We'll specifically talk about federal facility agreements and how that helps with implementation of RCRA and CERCLA at federal facilities. So the first graphic I wanted to share with you all is actually adapted from a 1994 graphic. And what I want to really point out to you here is that there is a lot of, I guess I would say comparable. It's the same, but slightly different if you're going through a CERCLA cleanup versus a RCRA cleanup. So we've come in and color-coded this to get a better idea of showing with cleanup, we're ultimately wanting to protect human health and the environment from contamination. So under CERCLA, where you would do site discovery, have that federal facility listed on the docket, for in RCRA, that would be a permit application or discovery of release. Then you would go through the RCRA 3016 reporting process. But if they're similar, from there, you determine if action is needed. If so, you look at that initial assessment of what's going on at the site. If it's enough risk is posed there and you determine, okay, do we need to move forward with a cleanup action, be it under CERCLA or RCRA, you'll move forward with CERCLA. That may get you on the NPL. With RCRA, it might be issuing a permit or a permit modification. From there, under CERCLA, we have a federal facilities agreement. With RCRA, you would have a federal facilities compliance agreement. And then just continuing on through the rest of the cleanup process, under CERCLA, we use terms like remedial investigation and feasibility study. Whereas if you're looking at corrective action, it would be a RCRA facility investigation with a corrective measure study. Ultimately, you get to that cleanup decision and your remedy selection or corrective measures selection. In CERCLA, we're talking about issuing a proposed plan for public comment, ultimately getting to a record of decision. And with corrective measures, it would be a selection of that corrective measure. And again, the permit modification or 3008 order. Ultimately, you implement that remedy, you go through your design, implementing the action. And under CERCLA, ideally, you're trying to get to that deletion of the site from the NPL if it was placed on the NPL list, though you may have five-year reviews or continued O&M. With the corrective action route under RCRA, you would issue a certificate of completion, have a final permit modification when that cleanup is done, and then you may also have O&M or operations and maintenance moving forward. So I really just wanted to start this webinar saying, you know, they're not so different. There's a lot of overlap, but we also are going to talk about the challenges of integration and some of the lessons we've learned or challenges we're still facing in that. So now, before we switch to our RCRA perspective, we have a little apply your understanding. I don't want to call it a quiz, but let's just check in and see how we're doing so far. So the question is, what is the main cause for disputes and a lack of integration between CERCLA and RCRA in determining how a site should be cleaned up?
All right, and Emmy, just in case people are having problems reading those poll questions, they are on that slide. You can make the poll window wider if need be, but she has shown the options available there on the screen. And that is me buying a little bit of time to allow the audience here to cast their votes. Remember, simply click the circle to the left of the answer that you wish to select and hit that submit button. About half of you have participated. There is no penalty if you get it wrong. So this is only going to improve your overall participation if you take your best guess if you're not sure. If you happen to be participating as a group, fight it out amongst yourselves and let's land on an answer. And we'll talk about the right one here in just a moment. So Emmy, we've reached about 75% of the audience having voted. So I'll go ahead and end this poll and let's share those results. And it looks like overwhelmingly, C, professional judgment, was selected by about 90% of the students.
I think that's a pretty accurate, and sometimes professional judgment is, you know, it's not black and white, right? It's not crystal clear. So the other options there, A, B, and D, were really just generalizations about the programs and the site managers themselves, which typically aren't the issue, but often it's really just two differences in professional judgment rather than a difference in the approach of the RCRA process or the CERCLA process. So it's really important that we're able to focus on, you know, the end result. Are we going to get that cleanup that's necessary to protect human health and the environment? And can that focus of the endpoint really help with cost, time, and money that's going to be spent on that cleanup? But thank you for taking the poll. We are going to go ahead and bring on our other instructor. And while she's coming online, there we go, one second. All right, take it away, Shu.
Thank you, Emmy. Thank you, everyone. Good afternoon. How are you all doing? My name is Shum Akinloton. I'm a physical scientist and also the federal facilities lead for RCRA corrective action here at the EPA headquarters in Washington, D.C. My office is the Office of Resource Conservation and Recovery, and I work under the Cleanup Program branch. Prior to joining the EPA, I worked at the DEP, Pennsylvania DEP, for 14 years, and I conducted inspections, RCRA inspections at Pennsylvania DEP. So I do have a lot of experience inspecting municipal, residual, and hazardous waste generating sites, transporters, and also TSDFs. And I also conducted inspections, responding to spills, complaints, and incidents. I have a bachelor's degree in environmental management and toxicology, and also a master's degree in environmental health. Here at EPA, I've been focused on different projects of national significance. I have been working on a data cleanup project and also involved in some climate change work, and also involved in RCRA corrective action training work. All right, we're going to get started now. And my role today is to provide you with a background. We're going to start with a background.
And Emmy, you may need to turn off the laser pointer. Yeah.
Okay, is it working now?
So we can see that you can move. So if you want to right click on the slide and turn off the laser pointer. So right click, yep. And we're going to go to pointer options. And then you're going to click laser pointer to turn it off. And now try clicking on those slides. There we go.
All right, thank you. Let's go back to the overview for today. So I'm going to be talking about the background of RCRA and CERCLA, and then from there, I'll move on to discussing the similarities and the differences. We're going to talk about impediments to RCRA, CERCLA integration from a RCRA perspective, and also some strategies that we can use to improve RCRA, CERCLA integration. And I'll also provide you with a summary. All right, so let's go back in time to really go back to understanding what RCRA and CERCLA is about. Before I go on with my discussion, I would like to find out, what do RCRA and CERCLA stand for? If you know the answer, feel free to use the Q&A option, type in the full meaning of RCRA and CERCLA.
And Shin, I assume if they don't know, it's okay to say that too, right?
Because absolutely. it's okay. You don't have to know it, but if you know it, go ahead and type it in the comment box. Mm-hmm.
I suspect they are busily typing. And I've got one person has said that RCRA is Resource Conservation and Recovery Act.
That's great. And that person is correct. Do we have anybody?
And we also had someone who indicated CERCLA is the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act. So ta-da!
Awesome, awesome. Thank you for participating in that. So RCRA is the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, and CERCLA is the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act. So RCRA, let's go back to RCRA. And this is important because it provides perspective and it helps us to understand better what these cleanup programs are all about. RCRA is actually an amendment to the Solid Waste Disposal Act of 1965. And at that time, municipal waste was the main focus for the Solid Waste Disposal Act. Hazardous waste was not addressed. And as we got into the 70s, there were growing concerns about the management of hazardous waste around the country. And in 1976, Congress decided to enact the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, 1976. And then in 1984, we had another amendment, which is the Hazardous and Solid Waste Act, which actually provided for corrective action. So the ISWA Act, which is the Hazardous and Solid Waste Act of 1984, provided for RCRA corrective action. And that is why we can require corrective action at different sites, including federal facilities today. Moving on from 1984, there was another amendment to RCRA in 1992, and that's the Federal Facilities Compliance Act. And then in 1996, we had the Land Disposal Program Flexibility Act. I'm going to talk about RCRA a little bit, and I'm talking about RCRA, I'm talking about ISWA, and also the Federal Facilities Compliance Act. So let's start with RCRA. RCRA is an amendment to the Solid Waste Act of 1965, just like I said earlier. It was enacted by Congress in 1976, and it also controls waste from cradle to grave. So if you've been hearing about cradle to grave, this is where it came from. And what that means is that RCRA monitors waste from the point of generation up until the point of disposal. With ISWA, it provided for corrective action, just like I shared earlier as well. And if you go to RCRA 3004U, it says that each permit shall require corrective action for all releases of hazardous waste or constituents from any solid waste management unit at an active or inactive treatment, storage, or disposal facility. So the key words to underline in that statement is active and inactive. So RCRA can require cleanup from active and inactive facilities. Also, ISWA addresses both on and off-site releases. If you are the owner or operator of a federal facility and you have some type of release, hazardous waste release on your site, you are also required to provide for cleanup for off-site releases. ISWA also provided for waste minimization, increased enforcement authority for the EPA, and also provided more stringent hazardous waste management standards. Moving on to FIFCA of 1992, I call it FIFCA, that's the Federal Facilities Compliance Act. Before 1992, there was a lot of confusion about whether federal facilities were required to comply with RCRA or, you know, to do corrective action. There was a lot of confusion. People were talking about sovereign immunity. But with the FIFCA in 1992, that made it explicitly, people could understand that, okay, the sovereign immunity of the United States was waived in 1992. And then it also required that federal agencies that own or operate hazardous waste facilities to reimburse EPA for the cost of inspection and subjected federal agencies to RCRA civil penalties by expanding the waiver of the sovereign immunity. So again, FIFCA provided that all federal facilities are subject to the requirements of solid and hazardous waste management. So the sovereign immunity was waived in 1992. So we have a quick knowledge check. I just finished talking about this. Which of the following is not a key provision of the FIFCA? You have three options to choose from. You can either choose A, B, or C.
All righty. So again, a gentle reminder, if you can't see all of the text, go ahead and shift or make that poll window larger. Or of course, you can simply read what was on the slide and then pick based off the letter A, B, or C. It looks like about a quarter of the attendees have voted. So we'll give them a little bit longer because this might be a little bit of time to read the wording on there. But I do seem to see some general agreements, although wait, the bars are moving. So now they're battling it out a bit. And what I thought they were all going to pick, it's shifting around a little. All right, again, we're about half of you or so. If you're having any issues in the polling, you can always type in your letter selection in the Q&A, A, B, or C too, if that's just simply easier for you given your setup. And if you're not sure, you can also put I'm not sure in the Q&A. That's okay.
Yeah, so it looks absolutely okay.
Looks like we're at about 60%. I'll give it just a few more seconds. I'd like to get at least 2/3 of you having submitted an answer. And as we're nearing close to that, I will go ahead and get ready to hit that end button in 2, 1, and we will end and we will share the results. So the audience was a little split on this one. More than half picked A, but then, you know, a quarter went to B and a quarter went to C.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everyone that participated. The correct answer is A. So which of the following is not a key provision of FIFCA? A is the right answer because, like I said earlier, in 1992, that provision was waived. That sovereign immunity was waived. So affirming sovereign immunity is not the right, it's the right answer. It's not a key provision of FIFCA. So if you're not taking anything away from this session today, just remember that all federal facilities are subject to enforcement requirement with respect to solid and hazardous waste management. A little bit about CERCLA. CERCLA was enacted in 1980, and once again, CERCLA stands for Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act. And then we also have that amendment in 1986. It's called SARA, and it stands for Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act. So what are some key things to note about CERCLA? CERCLA was that act that established prohibitions and requirements concerning closed and abandoned waste sites. There were a lot of waste sites that were abandoned back in the 60s, 70s, even though this waste were legal to dump at that time when they were dumped, but they began to create problems, and Congress decided to act by enacting CERCLA. And CERCLA also provided liability for persons responsible for releases of hazardous waste at this site. And this is full liability. So it doesn't matter whether you generated the waste and you sent it to a disposal facility, you're still responsible for the waste. So CERCLA provides for full liability. Another key thing that CERCLA did was to establish a trust fund to provide for cleanup when there's no responsible party. And then I also wanted to mention that there's a super fund that CERCLA established, but the federal facilities do not have access to that super fund. The federal facilities are funded through DOD, Department of Defense. And with CERCLA, it also enabled the revision of the National Contingency Plan. For SARA, some key things to note. I don't want to read the slides, but you have access to the slide. But I also wanted to say that SARA was that amendment that provide for increased focus on human health problems that were posed by hazardous waste sites. All right, so I'm gonna skip this knowledge check.
Okay, I closed that one down. Go right ahead.
That's fine. Now it's time to talk about some similarities between RCRA and CERCLA, because a lot of people find it difficult to understand what is going on. So are there similarities between RCRA and CERCLA? Absolutely. So let's talk about three of those similarities right now. Both RCRA and CERCLA established cleanup programs. As you know, RCRA, we have corrective action, and then CERCLA, we also have remedial actions or response actions. So you have to clean up waste if you have waste on your site, and it doesn't matter if the waste is on site or off site. Both CERCLA and RCRA, they address past and present releases, and they also have similar end goal, which is to protect the human health and the environment. And that's the mission that we have here at PPA. We're here to protect human health and the environment. So what are some of the differences? RCRA and CERCLA, yes, they're very similar, but they also have their differences. Emmy went through some of the differences in approaches that RCRA and CERCLA uses to clean up waste that are identified at their site. But I wanted to highlight some key differences here. And the first one is that RCRA is a proactive program that regulates how waste should be managed to avoid potential threats to human health and environment. So RCRA focuses more on making sure that there's no contamination. So we keep track of the waste from cradle to grave, making sure that everyone is safe. And CERCLA is designed to remedy those threats to human health and the environment from unexpected releases. So you might have a disposal facility, or you might have a solid waste management unit on site that is designed to work properly, but sometimes unexpected things happen and we have releases. So CERCLA is designed to remedy those threats to human health. Another key point to note in terms of differences is the fact that all RCRA hazardous waste are regulated as CERCLA hazardous substances. On the other hand, CERCLA encompasses RCRA hazardous waste and also includes toxic pollutants that are regulated by the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and also the Toxic Substances Control Act. So CERCLA, for short, is a more comprehensive regulation. RCRA provides for financial assurance. So each site that is trying to get a permit is required based on ISWA, which is the Hazardous and Solid Waste Amendment of 1984. They are required to provide financial assurance, which means that they have to be able to show the EPA or the state that they are able to handle any financial responsibility that results from any type of releases that occur on site or off site. CERCLA establishes a super fund, which is applicable to many sites, but federal facilities do have their own special fund that they have access to. And also, the facility owner or operator implements RCRA corrective action. A lot of states have been authorized to implement the RCRA program. EPA authorizes the states. We have a lot of states that are authorized to do that. And there are a few states that are not authorized and EPA takes the lead. But ultimately, for cleanups that go on at RCRA facilities, the facility owner or operator would implement the corrective action while EPA and the states would provide oversight. And then with CERCLA, different parties can implement a CERCLA remedial action in a different number of ways. So there's more flexibility in that regard. All right, let's take this poll. Let's see, can CERCLA and RCRA be successfully integrated at federal facilities? Do you think it is possible? Do you think it's impossible? Do you think it's sometimes? Pick an option.
Alrighty, so I'm seeing lots of answers coming in on this one. This one should be a straightforward one. And as we're getting it, just around 2/3 of the audience having voted here, remember, you can pick any one of the three, and then we can talk a bit about where you all have landed as a class. So if you have clicked over to email, go ahead and click back over to Zoom and cast your vote here on this poll. I'm going to go ahead and close the poll here in 3, 2, 1, and let's talk about those results. So it looks like more than half of the audience says sometimes, and almost the other half say yes.
Wow. Good results. Well, let's find out. Yes, let's find out what's going on. From a recurve perspective, looks like my slides are not cooperating. Okay. So from a recurve perspective, we love integration. Everyone would appreciate integration because both programs they have similar end goals, and those end goals are to protect human health and the environment, and they are both cleanup programs. But we do have some constraints to integration, especially from a recurve perspective. So I'm speaking from a recurve corrective action perspective. We do have some impediments to integration. And one of the big things that have happened over the years is the applicability of both programs can be confusing. So someone or a site, a federal facility that has the obligation to follow RCRA corrective action and also has that obligation to follow CERCLA. Sometimes interpreting what is required for both programs can be really confusing and can lead to roadblocks. And then also, we do have some integration memos that are historical because they are outdated. And most of these memos were developed in the 90s, and now we are in 2022. So those memos and policies failed, we have new challenges that have happened over the years. So those memos and policies are outdated. And we also have RCRA. Like I said earlier, that some states are authorized to implement the RCRA corrective action program. While with CERCLA, it's a little bit different. So if integration happens, there's always this the number of involved parties increases, and it just leads to a lot of complexities. But despite those impediments, are there strategies that we can use to improve RCRA CERCLA integration at federal facilities? Absolutely, absolutely. And we are constantly working and finding better ways. So some of those ways are communication. So one of the big things that happen at a cleanup site is the lack of communication or confusion about who is leading what. So if we have more communication between CERCLA and RCRA programs, especially from a federal facilities standpoint, it can help to improve the strategies for integrating RCRA CERCLA at federal facilities. Also, we can try to be more flexible in our approaches. And of course, number three is collaboration. The more we collaborate, the more we can agree on things and then come together and make sure that we are protecting human health and the environment. All right, so summary, RCRA CERCLA integration is possible on a case-by-case basis. And then federal facilities, if you're a federal facility owner or operator, you should continue to comply with all RCRA and CERCLA regulations as applicable. And also, when in doubt, be sure to contact your local, state, and federal officials. And if you have any questions, we have a lot of resources on our website, and you can always reach out to people that can answer your questions. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions for me directly, here's my email at kinlotson.shun@epa.gov. If you have any questions, please feel free to send in your questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. I do want to remind the audience that Q&A space is available to continue to submit questions and comments for our speaker. Shun, I do have a few that came in. And one of these is a more comment, sort of observation from one of the attendees. So I just want to read this and then you can share your thoughts. They note that it's perplexing to them how the federal government uses, quote, the sovereign immunity stance when it comes to complying with some of the environmental laws. And she's just curious, they want to know if you can comment on why that's allowed.
Can you repeat the question?
So they're confused as to how the federal government uses sovereign immunity stance when it comes to complying with some environmental laws. So I believe if I'm reading through the lines, sometimes they don't comply with those laws under the stance of sovereign immunity, and they want to know why that's allowable.
Well, I don't have an answer to that. I don't know why sometimes they comply or why sometimes they don't comply, but I do know that there are a lot of complexities that happen at this site, and it's not always straightforward. It depends on the specific thing going on at that site. Mm-hmm. So it's all about reviewing those sites on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. I do also want to just make a note. A number of people have asked about copies of the presentation materials. Those are already posted on the seminar homepage. I highlighted those at the start of the class, and I will highlight that at the very end of the class. So if you are going to type in and ask for a copy of her wonderful slides, we already have copies of those posted, and I'll remind everyone how you can access that. We did have a question that came in. If you can talk about how the CERCLA ARAR applies to CERCLA cleanups, and I'm not sure, Emmy, if this is best to hold this one to the later on.
Yes, Emmy's our CERCLA expert.
Yeah, I think we can try and revisit that question after we've gone through a few more of the slides.
Okay. All right. Well, how about this one very basic question, Emmy, while I have you? Can you give them a definition for federal facilities?
Oh, sure. That's actually a really great question and not one we often receive. So in general, federal facility are any buildings, installations, structures, land, equipment, what else? Aircraft, vehicles, or generally just property that are either owned, leased, or constructed and manufactured for the federal government. So you might have federal facilities that are government owned, government operated, or government owned and contractor operated. There is a specific definition for federal facilities in Chapter 15 of the US Code. It's Section 205C, and that really gets into the exact definitions of a federal facility. And I'm sure we could post that if people are interested in having that as a resource.
Okay. All right. We had a question about CERCLA waivers of some RCRA requirements. And so, Emmy, again, should we hold that one back or should we take that one now?
I would say if you're interested in ARAR and ARAR waivers, you should definitely participate in our webinar that speaks about determining ARARs at federal facilities, where we go into this in much more detail. And yeah, sign up for the course. It's coming later this year.
Okay. All right. And then there's just a sort of a general question. And Shun, I don't know if you can comment on any EPA guidances. Do you know of a time scale or time frame for any updates that might be coming on RCRA related guidances?
I don't have a date, but definitely we're looking into it. We're constantly having conversations with our CERCLA folks. So I don't have a date, but we're working on it.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, I think that's all that I see in the queue right now, but I did want to pass on a number of big thank yous from the audience that came in, Shun. A lot of people loved your presentation, so kudos to you. They all say thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Emmy, I'll hand it back to you.
Awesome, thank you so much. Let's go ahead and keep on rolling. So just in summary, Shun did a great job of talking about our RCRA and CERCLA and how they compare One is a regulatory program with RECRA regulating waste from cradle to grave, and CERCLA is looking at abandoned waste sites. So it's a response program. So what are some specific examples of overlap? Well, you can look at the first step after discovery of a release, where you're examining the available data to see if emergency action is warranted. That is an example of overlap. Both programs allow for short-term measures to abate any immediate adverse effects of a release. Both involve investigations and formal study to determine that long-term cleanup solution. And again, post-analyses are really important to be able to provide the basis for that formal selection of the remedy. And last, that common goal. Again, we're trying to protect human health and the environment from hazardous waste. What I'd like to get into now is a legal lesson looking at RECRA versus CERCLA at a federal facility site. Note that this is a bit dated. We're looking at 1989, and it's a case from the state of Colorado versus the Army. So we're looking at the Rocky Mountain Arsenal site, RMA. And in 1942, RMA was established by the U.S. Army to manufacture chemical warfare agents and munitions for World War II. So that's 1940s. We're going way back there. But in 1987, Rocky Mountain Arsenal was added to the national priorities list as a federal facility. But one thing to note, at this time, EPA's RECRA policy, when the NPL listing was proposed initially in October of 1984, was to exclude an area from an NPL site if it was RECRA-regulated land disposal unit. So this area known as Basin F at RMA, it's a lagoon identified as a regulated land disposal unit. So EPA excluded it from the NPL listing. That was our policy at the time. Okay, NPL listing moves forward. But prior to that, I just want to point out in 1984, the state of Colorado received authority to run its federal RECRA program. So that was a couple of years before the listing happened. All right. So then in 1989, we have our federal facilities agreement that was signed at Rocky Mountain Arsenal. So this is where the problems kind of started. Both Colorado and the Army claim jurisdiction and control over the cleanup of the toxic waste in that Basin F. So Colorado claimed jurisdiction over cleanup under RECRA. Remember, it's not on the NPL site at this time. The Army claimed that required cleanup under CERCLA should prevent Colorado from interfering. Again, this is before 1992 and the information that Shun just provided. But so we're before that. What ultimately happened in this case was that the decision was a federal facility being cleaned up under CERCLA is not immune to state enforcement actions under RECRA. So that was a big deny to the Army for this site. And here we have an excerpt of the judge's opinion saying, you know, given the ordinary meaning of these words, federal facilities such as Basin F are subject to state and local requirements respecting the treatment and disposal of hazardous waste, provided that those state and local requirements set out specific and precise standards. And the judge went on to say, having found that Colorado regulations satisfy these standards, they're both specific and precise, I conclude that the Army's motion to dismiss based on this argument must be denied. So that did not go the way the Army thought it would. Ultimately, F Basin would get added to the NPL site, but that was many years later with a lot of back and forth. But I just wanted to focus on that decision because it showed that states may enforce their day-to-day hazardous waste management laws at CERCLA sites, and placement on the NPL does not preempt state enforcement. And last, RECRA really is more than just an ARAR. It really needs to be seriously considered to ensure that all the requirements are being met. But these statements are rather grand, aren't they? EPA ultimately had to issue memos and policies to further clarify how to integrate RECRA and CERCLA. And we'll be going over a number of those in the following slides. But first, we're going to have a quick poll to see if we're tracking together. Jean, do you want to run us through that?
Sure. So I've got that poll open now, except this one's a little bit different. Instead of there being squares to the, or pardon me, circles to the left, you'll see squares. This is a check all that applies. So you may pick multiple answers. So simply click the boxes or squares to the left of any or all answers that you think are correct, and then hit that submit button. Remember, if you need to, you can move that poll window around, make it wider to read everything, but we do have the questions there on the slide. And for those of you on mobile devices, you may need to hit that more menu button to access the polls that have been popped up. So Emmy, as I'm looking at the results here, we've got about 40% of the audience having voted. We're getting now up to 50%. They do seem to be pretty clearly staking the correct answer. There's some clear groupings here. So we have some consistency, at least amongst the class. I'll give you all just a few more moments to select either A, B, C, D, or any combination of those things. And of course, you can type them into the Q&A if that might be easier for you for any reason. We're now at about 60% of the audience having voted. And I know sometimes people need just a moment to read and think. So as I pause here for just a moment, see if a few more answers come on in, I will go ahead and end this poll down now in 3, 2, 1, and let's talk about those results. So it looks like about 2/3 selected A. Some people selected B, a number of you selected C, but then a lot of you, almost 90% of you selected D.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. The correct answers are A and D. So substantive portions of RCRA may be an ARAR for a CERCLA cleanup action, and state hazardous waste laws are enforceable at CERCLA sites. So something to keep in mind. All right, well, thank you to everyone for participating in the poll. I'd like to switch over to our next instructor. Monica, would you introduce yourself and take us through the next slides?
Yes, hey, thank you everybody and good afternoon. Thanks, Emmy. My name is Monica McGady. I also work in the Federal Facilities Restoration Reuse Office. I am my background, I'm a chemical engineer and I have a master's in environmental engineering. I've been working in this program for over 20 years and I'm actually the lead on Department of Energy sites. I coordinate also with our Region 10 office in the Seattle area. And I also am the lead on post-construction issues, particularly on 5-year reviews. And the next few slides, I'm going to talk about the importance of a federal facility agreement and talk and roles and responsibilities. Next slide, please. So why are we talking about federal facilities agreement? Federal facilities agreements under CERCLA Section 120E2 basically requires the federal agencies to enter into what we call it an IAG, or what's in the laws called an interagency agreement. But we commonly refer to that as a FFA or federal facility agreement with EPA for the remedial actions at federal facility sites on the MPL. So basically the FFA actually specifies who is responsible for what and when. And it's an important document because it identifies the roles and responsibilities of not only the lead federal agency, but also EPA, and also, and sometimes the state. That's if the state is a signatory on the FFA. The FFA also talks about, as I said, responsibilities as a lead agency. The definition of lead agency, that's defined in the National Contingency Plan. And that basically, the lead agency as the agency, it plans and implements response actions under the NCP and the lead agency provides a lead agency authorities for federal facility sites. There are some different roles and responsibilities for lead agencies. If you're the lead agency is Department of Defense or Department of Energy site, they have a little bit more actually responsibilities related to removal actions. And that is different from the other federal agency. So one of the things we talk about is the federal a federal facilities agreement are really based on model language. And that language was developed in 1988 and then with Department of Defense and then also modified in 1999 with the Department of Defense. Again, the FFAs ensure that the public is informed about and has the opportunity to participate in the cleanup process to ensure safety and protectiveness. And the FFA is the important document that really clarifies how CERCLA and record correction action will be implemented. And we'll give, as I talk further, I have some examples of where the federal facility agreement specifically talks about CERCLA and record corrective action and roles and responsibilities. Next slide, please. So federal facility agreements. As we talked about, they are enforceable. They circle section 310 of the citizen suit provision. They also, in addition, section 122 of ELS specifically authorizes imposition of civil penalties for failure or refusal to comply with an FFA. According to CERCLA, the FFA should be entered within 180 days of the review of the RIFS, which is the Remedial Investigation Feasibility Study. Many times, as we have seen as far as practice, many times those negotiations are conducted after the federal facility is promulgated on the MPL. We at EPA has a policy that basically says that when you're entering the FFA, we rather see that being done as the RIFS is being conducted. And the reason why we have that policy is that it gives us an opportunity, not just EPA, but if the state again is a signatory on the FFA, it gives us an opportunity to be involved in the process early. As I mentioned, we do try to have the FFAs as a three-party agreement. There are, I think, at least three states that do not sign off on FFAs. The state I live in Maryland is one of them, but we do try to have the FFAs as a three-party agreement with the lead federal agency, EPA, and the state. Just as an aside, DOE has really changed almost all of its FFAs, and this is many years ago, to identify EPA as the lead regulatory agency to resolve dueling requirements with state record corrective actions, with the exception of one site, and that's the Hanford site in the state of Washington. Next slide, please. So I'm going to talk about FFAs and defining CERCLA record roles. As I mentioned before, we do have what we call the 1988 model EPA language that talks about between EPA and DOE, includes a section. There's a section titled Statutory Compliance, Record CERCLA Integration. And it also appears in the EPA and the DOD model language, the Fort Eustis model language is really the Fort Eustis language is the FFA that is actually the model language that is used really at Department of Defense sites. And one of the things I'd like to mention is that this section was designed again to identify requirements of each program, really that applicable to a facility and minimize duplication. The reason why this is important is because in the past, there was a lot of duplication of efforts between the RECRA and the CERCLA program. And what we were seeing is that it was taking longer for the cleanup. And of course, it was costing more. So there's been some efforts. And again, I agree that some of those policies are very outdated, but there has been an effort to try to explain what we mean by record CERCLA integration and to try to set some policies regarding record CERCLA integration. I would say to you that right now we have 175 federal facility sites on the national priority list, MPL. There is actually two sites. We have one that's was listed on the MPL very recent in March of 2022, where we're working on with the Army Corps of Engineers on their federal facility agreement. But we also have one site that has been on the MPL for a while, where we are working with the, and when we say we, our EPA Region 4, the Army, and also the state of Alabama, where we're working on actually putting in place a federal facility agreement at that site. And I think that's important because that site will be, that federal facility agreement will be a very good example of record circular integration. And in fact, it's a good example of how we're using the record work to actually do the cleanup at the site, where the state of Alabama is the lead on the cleanup on the record side. Next slide, please. So this is an example. Travis Air Force Base is a site in Region 9 in the state of California. It's a site where there is specific language in their federal facility agreement regarding record circular integration. And Travis Air Force Base, as I said, is located in California. They had activities at landfills, they had the fire training area, radioactive burial site, solvent spill acres, contaminated groundwater soil, and a creek that was contaminated with volatile organic compounds. As it says, the federal facility agreement was signed in 1989. And again, this document, this federal facility agreement, established the roles that Travis Air Force Base, the EPA, the California Department of Toxic Substance Control, and the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board would each organization, what role they would have in the restoration of the Travis Air Force Base. And it also talked about a formal mechanism of how that, how the roles and responsibilities are defined. Next slide, please. So, in Travis Air Force Base, there's a clause which is called Clause 17. And again, this clause is important because it talks specifically about record circular integration. And it's presented, basically, there are three clauses. There's 17.1 that talks about circular and regulatory requirements, how they will be satisfied. Clause 17.2 talks about remedial actions will be protected and no additional corrective action on the record will be necessary. And then there's a third clause that's, and again, clause 17.3, that basically states that requirements to obtain permits for response actions, and basically permits for actions under the agreements are not required as provided for in CERCLA and the NCP. And again, throughout this clause, and we've highlighted three of them, but throughout this section within the federal facility agreement, it again indicates the activities that will be conducted in a manner to support the intent and objectives of the clause and ensure that there is protection of human health and the environment. Next slide, please. Let's see, wanted to make one comment before we go to apply your understanding and go to the poll. All of this background information regarding the Travis Air Force Base, federal facility agreement, regarding the Fort Eustis model language for federal facility agreements is part of your references in your documents. So that's available to you. So Jean, why don't we go to apply your knowledge, your understanding rather, and put up the poll. So it actually asks, which of the following are true regarding federal facility agreement? A, that it provides a technical, legal, and management framework under which responses at federal facilities conducted. B, requires state signature. C, enforceable and authorized to impose civil penalties for refusal to comply through CERCLA. Or D, must follow the model language provided in the 1988 model FFA language. So, Jean, go ahead.
All right. So that poll is up and running. Remember, this is one of the select all it applies. You're going to be clicking on the boxes to the left of those options as they appear. And once you've made your selections, go ahead and click the submit button. It looks like about a third of the audience has cast their vote. So they're thinking through this one, Monica. They're slowly cranking in those responses. So we'll give them another moment or two. And we do have a number of questions that came in regarding FFA. So I think there certainly is some opportunities here in just a few moments to clarify some of their questions here. Remember, there's no penalty if you get this one wrong, right? We're just checking, and then this
we're
might
just
help.
Checking, right, checking your knowledge, checking whether, you know, what we've said is sinking in, I guess. Yeah,
exactly. Well, it looks like we're almost at 2/3 of the class having guessed or given this their best answer here. So I'm going to go ahead and end the poll here at 3, 2, 1. And let's talk about those results. So it does look like almost everybody picked A.
A,
some
and A
people,
is correct.
Okay.
Right.
Some picked
yes.
B, and then saw a lot of people picked C, and then some picked D.
So B is, so the federal facility agreements do not require state signature. Again, it's a policy that the state sign off on it, but it's not a requirement. C, enforceable and authorized to impose civil penalties for refusal to comply through CERCLA. Yes, C is actually correct. Must follow the model language provided in the 1988 model. It's, you don't, the must is the key thing. We want you to follow the model language, but there are times where you have to deviate from that. And again, working with EPA and working with all attorneys, we will, you know, talk about those deviations. So it's not a must, but we encourage you to follow the 1988 model language and also the 2009 Fort Eustis model language. All right, so A and C are actually the correct answers. But again, there's some nuances to the questions. So next slide, please. Yeah, and again, these are some key guidance that we wanna make sure you're aware of. Everyone has said, some of this guidance is outdated. We are going to be working on, hopefully, to update these guidances. And the updates are based on just experience. We've been doing this for a long time. And so we do have some experience in record CERCLA integration. And again, I think the site in Region 4 in Alabama will be a really good example of how we have incorporated record and CERCLA into the federal facility agreement. All right, I think that's it. And Jean, you want to go over the questions?
Absolutely. I can see Emmy's there as well. So Emmy, yep. You're here to help answer some of those questions too?
Yep.
All right.
We'll try to tag team them, Emmy. Okay.
All righty. So let's just jump right in here. Okay. Are there situations where states are not a member of the FFA?
Yes. Yes, there are situations. As I mentioned, the state I live in Maryland, does not sign off on federal facility agreements. And I think there's a total, Emmy, of 3 states. I can confirm that, but there are 3 states. And unfortunately, I don't have at the tip of my tongue what the other 2 states are, but Maryland is one of them. Yes.
Okay. All right. Our next question here is, are FFAs only for facilities that are on the NPL? Or can there be an FFA for facilities in states where the state takes the lead on CERCLA and state sites aren't on the NPL?
Federal facility agreements are only for federal facility sites
that are on the national priority list, the NPL.
Okay. We have someone who's looking for copies of FFAs, and is there a place where specific FFAs are posted or stored? How could someone get a copy of an FFA?
So I'll jump in there. The federal facilities agreement should be in the administrative record for the site you're interested in. The lead agency is responsible for maintaining that administrative record. It might be very obviously cited on their website, or it might be buried a little harder to find in an administrative record. But you can always reach out to that lead agency. They should have a public involvement person identified on their website where you could ask for a copy of that FFA if you're having trouble finding it. EPA at this time does not have a website with all the FFAs posted, but it is something we've considered doing for questions like this one.
Right. Okay. Exactly. And if you don't, and if you are working on a federal facility site and you don't have a copy of your federal facility agreement, once you hung up on this call, get the copy of that agreement. Get a copy of that
agreement and read it and go through it.
Okay. All right. Someone would like to know if you can explain FFSRAs.
I'm sorry, would you be?
It's a new acronym, FF, S as in Sam, R as in Robert, A as in Adam. And if the questioner wants to type in what that means or their definition of that acronym, we can come back to this one because we do have, so I'll wait for a clarification on that acronym. And this question is about PFAS investigations and FFAs. One of the attendees wanted to know, are PFAS investigations typically being conducted under the umbrella of FFAs, or are they conducted outside of FFAs in accordance with state regulations, if available?
I would like to table that question and get a response back from our PFAS experts in our office.
I'll jump in on that one, Jean.
Okay.
In general, for PFAS contamination, we prefer to have it addressed through CERCLA, through that process. However, the site is identifying it, be its own operable unit or part of existing operable units. So CERCLA is a preferred approach, but since it's an emerging contaminant, obviously we're still working through some of the technical aspects of doing that.
Okay. And we did get a clarifying, I believe, a clarifying response. So the attendee originally asked, can you also explain FFSRAs, please? They went on to say that the state of California has these for non-NPLs and then said that non-NPL federal facilities. I don't know if they, if I'm guessing at an acronym, federal facility state.
Federal Facility Support Remediation Agreement.
Okay.
It might be what they're talking about. And so for NPL sites, you have your FFA. For non-NPL sites where you have your lead federal agency paying for cleanup and the state serving as the lead regulator, they're going to have a separate type of document, whatever is appropriate or what is typically used in that state. So I think this may be a question about those non-NPL sites in California, but since EPA does not play a large role, we really can't speak to how they're implemented we're just not a party at the table. So a little difficult to answer questions there.
Yes.
Okay. And this is not exactly an FFA related question, but a more general one. Who determines whether the RCRA requirements have been met?
So remember, in a NPL site, you have your federal facility agreement. You'll go through the CERCLA process to issue a proposed plan and ultimately get to a record of decision. But there are years of work that go into that process. And EPA, the state, and the lead agency should be working together from the early parts of that CERCLA process, as early as you're scoping for your remedial investigation and throughout the rest of the process to start identifying what those ARARs should be and refining them as we get more information and get closer to issuing that record of decision by selecting the remedy. So ideally, all parties would be in agreement that those ARARs are being met and properly identifying which ARARs need to be included in the decision. So really isn't a one party gets to decide. Ideally, all parties would be in agreement, or you might end up in dispute, which is also a process described in the FFA, which could put a halt to that decision moving forward until it's worked out. Monica, did you want to add anything?
No, and I agree. And if for state ARARs, you should be working with your state counterpart to figure out what those ARARs are. And you should be working early in the process. There should be, as we talked about, communication that really is the key, is communication and an understanding of what are, what it's, the state is concerned about, what EPA is concerned about, and what the other federal agency is concerned about. Communication is key. And so you should be working with them early in the process.
Okay. There was one last question here, and I'm not sure if this was in reference to something in the example slides, but it's regarding ARARs. They state on 17.2, is that meaning ARARs would be implemented?
Yeah.
I believe they're referring to the Travis Air Force Base.
Right.
Yes, under your remedial action, you would be meeting your ARARs.
Yes.
Required.
Right.
Okay.
And you would be identifying and meeting those ARARs. And again, those could be state ARARs too.
Okay. All right, I think we can go ahead and carry on with the presentation at this time.
All right, I'll turn it back over to Emmy.
Thanks, Monica. All right, so we're going to go over some key guidance documents. Yes, some of them are a bit old, 1996, 97, and 2005. But until new guidance is issued, these are the items that we refer to. So we're going to go over each of these in more detail. So we're looking at coordination between RCRA corrective action and closure at CERCLA sites from 1996, then the 1997 lead regulator policy memo, and lastly, the 2005 improving RCRA CERCLA coordination at federal facilities. So let's go ahead and jump into the first one. And if you're looking for links to these guidance documents, again, that is available in your participant manual, so you can read each of these yourself if you like. But with the 1996 memo, what it really was trying to get at was reducing duplication of effort. Can we streamline the cleanup process and also build effective relationships between our RCRA corrective action and CERCLA programs? So it includes acceptance of decisions made by other remedial programs. So for example, if a site is being cleaned up under CERCLA and maybe your state partner is saying, oh, we don't agree with what you're doing, so we're going to make you lead cleanup agency do more under corrective action, that's not in step with this idea that you should accept, each program should accept each other's cleanup decisions as being protective. It also identified deferral of activities and coordination among RCRA, CERCLA, and state tribal cleanup programs where appropriate, and also coordination on the specific standards and administrative requirements for closure. That last one is a doozy, so we'll talk more about it in just a second. So with program deferral, it can be very efficient for both CERCLA and RCRA to address overlapping cleanup requirements. So if RCRA and CERCLA site managers can defer cleanup activities for all, or maybe even just part of a site to the other program, with the understanding that cleanup is not going to be required, or I should say additional cleanup is not going to be required by the deferring program, you're saying, yes, we have faith that this CERCLA program will meet the requirements of RCRA and agree with it moving forward. So that's the example there. If a CERCLA cleanup is completed at a RCRA facility, the RCRA program can state that CERCLA cleanup is sufficient corrective action, and the expectation is that there will be no further cleanup required by that deferring program. So in shorter words, a remedy that is acceptable under one program should be acceptable to meet the standards of the other. And that's the idea. And really, this concept of deferral from one program to another is actively used at EPA. We prefer it, again, to avoid that duplication of effort to make sure that resources are being used as effectively as possible. So deferral can be a good thing. As far as coordination between programs, sometimes that coordination will be required in scenarios where the cleanup requirements aren't overlapping. So you can't easily say, oh, that RCRA corrective action is going to meet the cleanup requirements under CERCLA, and we're going to defer to that. If there is no overlap, then coordination has to be done. So federal facility agreements, as Monica mentioned, are crafted so that cleanup responsibilities are clearly divided. So it identifies which parts of the sites are being done under CERCLA or RCRA. And it also, also should be identifying a timing sequence in which those CERCLA and RCRA decision documents, are going to be laid out to get to that final cleanup point. So when it comes to CERCLA decision documents, it could delay review of units addressed under RCRA, expecting that no additional cleanup will be needed. So you need that coordination to ensure that the documents are moving forward together and there isn't a need to halt a process because there's missing regulations or requirements that have to be considered and so on. That's where the relationships and the communication is so important. With RCRA closure and post-closure, I would say this is where we see a lot of challenges arise. So some RCRA CERCLA integration issues are really associated with what the requirements for closure of RCRA regulated units are with other cleanup activities. So a CERCLA cleanup plan that includes a RCRA regulated unit could be structured to comply with both CERCLA and RCRA closure and post-closure requirements. So again, that permit from under RCRA or the RCRA order could cite ongoing CERCLA cleanup and incorporate the CERCLA requirements by reference in the permit so that it's in the permit, but it's actually being done under CERCLA. That can get, you can imagine how that could get a little sticky already. Then there's this larger issue. This is not covered in the memo, but it's just a general issue we've seen at our headquarters office is inconsistent cleanup levels for removal and decontamination that we see could be resolved by using risk-based levels only, but that's not always how it plays out. So some clean closure levels have been set at background, while a CERCLA-related cleanup would have higher than background, potentially risk-based concentrations. And EPA encourages the use of risk-based levels for clean closure, but there are a lot of disagreements there. I don't have a solution to this, but just identifying that that can be a challenge and it perhaps is a conversation you should be ready to have at your sites. We've seen over time that many states have insisted that their closure requirements be addressed outside of CERCLA cleanups because closure requirements did not arise due to cleanup, which means they wouldn't come under the CERCLA 121E1 permit exemption. So it's again, it can start to get very sticky. This is an area where a lot of coordination and communication has to happen because there can be some just fundamental differences between your federal agencies and state agencies. So keep that in mind. Monica, did you want to jump in on this one?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I actually am going to pass it over to you now to talk about the lead regulator memo from 1997.
Yes, thanks, Emmy. And again, I'm going to talk about the lead regulatory policy for cleanup activities of federal facilities on the national priority list. And really, this memo was generated really because of, at the time in 1995, Administrator Browner, there was a task force, a sort of a task force that was formed that included, you know, not only federal agencies, but state and everything. And one of the things they talked about was the idea or the definition or the idea of a lead regulator and how sometimes when we're trying to integrate RCRA and CERCLA into the cleanup process, sometimes it's difficult to know who is actually the lead regulator. And so also one of the things that this did is it tried to eliminate, again, the duplication and streamline cleanup processes through appointing a lead regulator. And it's really geared toward federal facilities. And this policy really talks about, you know, the fact that states can sign on FFAs as equal partners. And as I mentioned, that's not always the case, but and some states really did express an interest in being the lead oversight agency at certain parts of the cleanup. And that is an opportunity for the state to be the lead regulatory agency. And we think that a CERCLA remedy will still, but basically, you know, it doesn't, this policy did not go against any of EPA's main responsibilities. Basically, EPA is still responsible responsible for remedy selection. And the primary regulatory agencies, whether it's EPA or the state, that oversees a cleanup work at an operable unit or area contamination under the applicable regulatory framework. And again, the purpose was really to sort of try to eliminate duplication and of course, eliminate costs. Next slide, please. So lead regulators, again, this memo identified what the lead regulators should actually do. The 1997 memo states that EPA endorses and encourages the identification of a single lead regulator to oversee the cleanup of federal facility sites on the NPL. It also talks about that they wanted to reduce the number of competing or oversight processes, such as reviewing response actions that occur during cleanup. This again, with this approach would enable states to oversee sites on a federal facility using a state program authorized under RCRA or other state cleanup authority once the site was deferred to the program. So again, it gives it reduces the redundancy of the oversight processes. Next slide, please. So, streamline oversight agreement for state LEAP cleanup and for portions of the site using a RCRA authorized state program or other appropriate authorities. It really involves, this has minimum EPA involvement. Really, we rely on the state to do the oversight work to develop a remedial alternative that EPA can agree on with minimal review. But it still requires, EPA still is required, and these actions are not actions that are can be authorized to the state. EPA is still required to do the list of site on the MPL, to make the final deletion decisions, and to adhere to CERCLA 120 at G and H that deals with property transfer. Also, under EPA-led under CERCLA, the state's involvement is very minimum at that point. And as I mentioned, we're going to go through a case study later on about the Hanford site where there is RCRA CERCLA integration and where the state of Washington does take the lead on some of the CERCLA actions at the site. But again, EPA still has authority for deletion and other activities. Community involvement, and this is also a big deal. The 1997 LEAP regulatory policy memo states that while federal-led cleanup agencies are responsible, they are responsible for providing community involvement under CERCLA. States where they are designated as a LEAP regulator should work to promote input from communities in a manner that fosters community participation and decisions regarding response actions at installations. That is definitely the role of the states. Federal agencies are the lead on community involvement, but the state should be involved in promoting and ensuring that the community is informed. And again, the state should take appropriate steps to ensure that the affected community and other affected parties are kept informed of any differences in the timetables or criteria that may be result from integrating the federal CERCLA process with a state program authorized under RCRA. Also, as stated in the 1996 memo, where EPA, the state, and federal facilities are entering into the LEAP regulatory agreement that is not currently captured in an existing FFA, they should make it the public notice should be provided about those changes. So if we're implementing a LEAP regulatory portion of the federal facility agreement, the community needs to know about it. Next slide, please. Now we're going to go through apply your understanding through a poll. This poll, there's several, I wouldn't say right answers, but there's several answers to this question. Thank you, Jean, for pulling up the poll. Again, the benefits of identifying a LEAP regulatory LEAP regulator includes which of the following, and apologize if I said regulatory, I meant regulator, includes which of the following: A, minimizing multiple regulator review and comment; B, reducing the number of redundant competing oversight processes; C, enables states to oversee sites on federal facilities using a state program; or D, allows the state to list sites on the MPL, make final deletion decisions, and adhere to CERCLA 120 G and H that deals with property transfer. So Jean, why don't we go through?
All right. So Monica, as I'm waiting for some of those responses to come in, periodically, it seems like your microphone has been switching. I think sometimes it's using the headset and sometimes it's not, or I don't know if we're moving that little mic boom further away. But we just had one or two people note that you got a little quieter. So if you want to say hi for me.
Hello.
All right, you sound good now. So I think that might have been it.
I readjusted my headset. Sorry about that. Hopefully.
Not a problem. Mm-hmm. Not a problem. So I do see those responses coming on in. Again, this is a check all that applies. So you can pick as many options as needed with those boxes to the left. We've got about half of the audience having cast their vote and submitting answers, and some additional ones are coming in. And as I'm waiting here for just a few moments, again, people just commented and said, thank you, sound perfectly good now, Monica. So that was all we needed to do to fix it.
Please, I apologize. Sorry about that.
No problem. No problem at all. I think we probably have got what we're going to get. And looking at this, it looks like the responses have slowed down. So I'm going to go ahead and end this poll and let's talk about those results. So it looks like overwhelmingly B had the largest number of selections, but A and C were pretty popular too.
Right, exactly. So A and C, I mean, A, minimizing multiple regulatory review and comment is definitely A is correct. Reducing the number of redundant competing oversight processes, B, absolutely correct. Enable states to oversee sites on a federal facility using a state program. C is actually also correct. D is not correct. Allows the state to list sites on MPL, make final deletion and property deletion decisions of property transfer issues. D is not correct. That is not the responsibility of the state. That continues to be the responsibility of EPA.
All right. So I will stop those results and we can carry on.
All right. So next thing we want to talk about is improving record coordination of federal facilities. Again, there was a 2005 coordination memo or policy memo that really, again, re-emphasize or reiterate the points of previous policies. And those policies and memos talked about integration and coordination between CERCLA and RCRA. And although there have been lots of reforms aimed at improving CERCLA and streamlining RCRA corrective action programs, issues still arise. They still arise related to duplicative efforts at using RCRA and CERCLA procedure requirements at federal facility sites. So this 2005 memo tried to address some of those continuing issues at federal facility sites. And again, it aims to address issues where overlapping RCRA and CERCLA procedure requirements and regulatory regimes are applicable. Next slide, please. So this memo also talked about exit strategy because there was some concern about when you are actually finished and on the CERCLA side, are you also finished on the RCRA side? And so this memo talked about what it means to do an exit strategy and how do you integrate RCRA and CERCLA integration clauses within an FFA to identify requirements that are applicable to facility and to minimize duplication. And again, the issue was some states sought to require corrective action closeout steps in addition to those under CERCLA. And the opinion is that their state record processes allow for more public involvement in a context of property transfer. And although this applies to all federal properties, you know, it's especially critical for federal properties that may be subject, again, to property transfer. If a final remedy will be selected that will leave some contamination in place, that's going to happen. Any issues about how this might affect property transfer after corrective action is complete should also be addressed upfront in the planning process. Again, the issue is, again, this memo talks about communications, talks about planning upfront, making sure we know how to exit out and knowing how it applies to CERCLA and RCRA. Next slide, please. So again, another issue was regarding CERCLA that talks about federal facility property transfer. Again, this integration, RCRA-CERCLA integration can be very important in a property transfer, especially when a state involvement is limited under CERCLA. And again, some states have asked or requested that record permits be modified and record corrective action be closed out in accordance with state and EPA guidance approaches, even when activities were under CERCLA. And this memo talks about that. And the reason why it talks about that is because, again, when we're doing property transfer, if we're still trying to figure out coordination between the RCRA and CERCLA programs, we know that that could actually have an impact on the time regarding property transfer. We know it also has an impact also on the costs associated with getting to the end. So again, this memo addressed that, in integrating the facilities record closeout process with the property transfer process. And this is what the recommendation is: under CERCLA can minimize additional delays and costs. So integrating the record closeout process with property transfer is the key. And those are the things that needs to be done, again, early in the process. And again, increasing the communication between the lead federal agency, EPA, and the state. Next slide. All right. I think that is it. We're going to move on to a case study that Emmy's going to talk about. And time check. Jean, do we want to move on to the case study, or do we have any questions?
Emmy, I think we might have time for just one question here, if that's okay. And sure. One of the attendees wanted to know, can a state be delegated responsibility for concurring on the five-year reviews?
Can a state be delegated, not for a federal facility site?
Okay.
No.
Okay. All right.
Not for, well, I'm sorry, not for an MPL federal facility site.
Okay.
And I'll just note, Monica is our five-year review expert at in our federal facilities program, so she definitely knows the answer to that one.
Right.
All right. Well, I think with that, we can carry on and move to the case study.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So we're going to go into a brief case study showing where we have RCRA CERCLA integration at a federal facility site under a federal facility agreement. So here we're looking at the Hanford site located in South Central Washington. And in 1989, there was a federal facilities agreement signed between the Department of Energy, EPA, and the Washington State Department of Ecology. We refer to as Ecology for short. So in this FFA, it specifically identified where RCRA, CERCLA, and the State Dangerous Waste Program overlap and describes how each program will interface to achieve an efficient regulatory program. So that sounds pretty good, right? You're like, oh yeah, it's just clearly laid out in this legally enforceable FFA, and it should be easy peasy to move forward. Well, not exactly. It's a good starting point, but there are still a lot of details that had to be worked out at this site in making sure all these programs were working together. Really quick, for those of you who are not familiar with the Hanford site, there are actually three NPL sites located here. They're known as the 100 area, which is, let me get my laser pointer here, the 100 area, which is along the Columbia River where nuclear reactors were built. We have the 200 area where chemical processing activities took place. And then we have the 300 area, which had a number of research facilities located there. And so with these three NPL sites, we had that FFA signed in 1989, and that was when Hanford changed from a mission to produce plutonium, historically for World War II and the Cold War, to cleanup. So we really switched gears in 1989. So how does this work? How do all these programs work together as laid out in the FFA? Well, at the Hanford site, there are a number of treatment, storage, and disposal units, TSDs, that are managed by the state under a permit. And these also include the Hanford single and double shell tanks. I'm not sure how many of you have heard of those, but they do hit the national news from time to time. So that part is a permit operated by the state. So that's where we have this Washington State Dangerous Waste Program. And I will note that Washington State is authorized to implement RCRA in the state. So as far as past practice units, those are falling under CERCLA for cleanup. However, you can see with the overlap with RCRA, there were some operable units identified in the FFA as being RCRA corrective action units. So the idea was that EPA would be the lead regulator for maybe roughly half of the operable units, and that Ecology, the state, would be the lead regulator for some as well. So the state is that given that lead regulator role through the FFA. again, when it comes to actually signing off on a CERCLA cleanup decision and a record of decision, that authority always remains with EPA. There's no way for that to be authorized to another identity, be it the state or another program that stays with EPA's CERCLA program. So through this, you have CERCLA cleanups moving forward, doing those RIFSs, issuing the proposed plans, having RODs issued for the state lead CERCLA past practice units or RCRA past practice, also known as corrective action units. They're going through a similar process, except with EPA is not the lead regulator on reviewing, the state is. And with the part of Hanford, let me go back for a second. Those TSDs I mentioned, all those underground single shell and double shell tanks, they're located here in the center portion of Hanford. So this is where a large portion of the permit is focused because it deals with those TSDs. Versus here along the river, we have a number of CERCLA operable units with lead regulatory roles divided between EPA and the state. So it can be done. Again, there are some challenges. This is just a real life example of where CERCLA, RCRA, and the state dangerous waste program are all playing roles in cleanup at a federal facility. All right, so the last memo we want to touch on is the management of CERCLA remediation waste under RCRA. And this is from 1998. So under CERCLA section 121E, it states that no federal, state, or local permit is required for on-site CERCLA responses. But EPA has interpreted that section to waive the requirement to obtain a permit and associated administrative and procedural requirements of permits. However, the substantive requirements would still apply as ARARs, even though there's not an actual permit being issued for those CERCLA cleanup activities. When we talk about on-site and off-site, there can be some confusion. So let's get into that a little bit. The off-site rule in CERCLA section 121D3 applies to any CERCLA response action involving off-site transfer of any hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant, essentially CERCLA wastes. So you might have a facility that, and this I'm thinking of a set up at Hanford. The Hanford site is 586 square miles. That's a lot of land. On the site, particularly the MPL sites, there might be some permitted facilities that can receive liquid discharge waste. But because that waste is going from a CERCLA cleanup to a permitted facility, that would be considered as going offsite because it's going to a facility that's operating in compliance with RCRA and other applicable federal and state requirements as identified in the permit. So it gets confusing. I will say we have a whole webinar dedicated to this topic if you have additional questions. So why do we have the offsite rule anyways? Well, really, we don't want to make more Superfund sites in the future. So it prohibits the transfer of these CERCLA waste to a land disposal facility that may release those contaminants to the environment. So EPA has an offsite coordinator in each region, and periodically every couple of months, they will check in on the facilities that are receiving CERCLA waste to ensure that there are no violations, that they're still in compliance. So it's not you get approval as an offsite facility to receive this waste and you're good to go. It is revisited quite frequently to ensure we're not disposing of CERCLA waste improperly. All right, the next, and we have two more topics I'm going to touch on briefly. The first is area of contamination. So this is more of a RCRA term, though sometimes you'll hear it used in a CERCLA space. Initially, when I was starting off with EPA and I would hear this reference to an area of contamination, I wasn't exactly sure why that was being brought up in a CERCLA context. But there, especially where you have a site where CERCLA and RCRA are being used, you can see how the terms get jumbled up. So under RCRA, an AOC allows certain discrete areas of generally dispersed contamination to be considered RCRA units, like usually landfills. So that area of contamination is equated to a RCRA land-based unit. So consolidation and in-situ treatment of that hazardous waste within the area of contamination doesn't create a new point of hazardous waste generation for the purposes of RCRA, because remember, it's the cradle to grave control of that waste. And it also avoids triggering land disposal restrictions. For example, the need to treat waste before it's disposed of in a landfill, in an area of contamination, something like that wouldn't be triggered. And the last item, which I'll cover quickly, a CAMU, Corrective Action Management Unit, again, is a term used in RCRA, but I have seen at federal facility NPL sites an attempt by the lead agency to use these corrective action management units in a CERCLA context. And it gets very divisive very quickly, at least in my experience. So a CAMU does not have to meet the land disposal restriction treatment standards. It differs from an area of contamination in that waste may be treated ex situ and then placed in the CAMU. And they also might be located in an uncontaminated area of the facility, and waste may be consolidated into that CAMU from areas that are not contiguously contaminated. And CAMUs have to be approved by EPA or the authorized state if they have their own program, and designated in a permit or corrective action order. So that's just a really quick look at what CAMUs are. If you are working in a CERCLA cleanup at a federal facility and the lead agency is attempting to use these terminologies, there may be a way to achieve something similar under CERCLA, looking at the offsite rule and how things could be considered on site, but we typically do not use this specific term. So if that's what is presented to you, it's time to have a conversation with your site team. All right, so we've come to our last slide. Just really quickly, in summary, federal facilities are both operating facilities that are subject to RCRA and past practice sites that might be subject to both CERCLA and RCRA corrective action. Remember, placement on the NPL does not preempt state enforcement, and states may enforce their hazardous waste laws at CERCLA sites. That whole sovereign immunity thing is out the window as of 1992. And remedial programs should continue to minimize any duplication of effort and second guessing of remedial decisions. So that threat of, well, if you don't do it how we want now, we're gonna come back with our remedial program or cleanup program and make you do more, is really not the intent of duplicating effort and having that lead regulator role identified. And lastly, program deferral can be a very efficient way for both CERCLA and RCRA to address overlapping cleanup requirements at those sites. So we'll go ahead and pause now. Hopefully we have a few minutes for any last questions. On screen, we have our contact information. If there are any questions and you'd like to reach out to us, the one thing I will say, if you have site-specific questions and you're looking to engage in that kind of conversation, it is always best to start with our EPA regional folks, your remedial project managers who are closest to the work, to begin that discussion. But for policy level questions or asking for more information on training, resources, things like that, we're happy to help.
All right. Well, we do have a few questions in the queue. And so this first question that I will ask gets back to five-year reviews. So Monica, I will just bring your attention to this one.
Okay.
The attendee wanted to know how else might you state the state's role in reviewing a federal five-year review? Because they themselves serve as a state regulator and they've actually offered concurrence a few times in five-year reviews. So they're just looking if you could clarify that.
So again, for NPL sites, you know, particularly, you know, if the state has a signatory on the FFA or is involved and of course
involved in some of the cleanup actions at a site, they should be reviewing the five-year review and also submitting comments. And we, EPA, we should work with them and coordinate with them to, you know, work out, you know, some issues related to our comments. And we and both the state and EPA should be submitting comments to the other federal agency, and that federal agency is to review the comments and work on implementing those comments in the report. So, but again, you know, the idea of the EPA has a role and responsibility in five-year reviews. EPA can either agree with the federal agency's protectors determination or issue its own. And it's geared toward really the idea that the EPA it's related to the remedy selection process. EPA's role is very defined in section 120 of CERCLA as far as our role in remedy selection. So because we are the, you know, can be the final, again, the final arbitrary of the of the selection of the remedy, we also are the final arbitrary of this, of whether the remedy remains protective of human health and the environment.
Okay.
So hopefully that answered your question. If you have additional questions, please don't hesitate to give me a call.
Okay. And I think that addressed our question. So I got a big thank you for you, Monica. So much appreciated. All right. Our next question, do all federal facilities have to have an FFA, even if that facility is only regulated under RCRA and not CERCLA?
So for any federal facility site on the NPL, it is required to have a federal facilities agreement. Yes. Regardless if the program is relying on a RCRA process or a CERCLA, you know, using RCRA, but agreeing that cleanup will meet the needs of the CERCLA program as well, you still need a federal facilities agreement for that federal facility NPL site.
Okay.
That's not policy, that's required by the regulations.
Right, by CERCLA 120, yes.
Okay. What measures are in place to ensure that you're going to get consensus on those closure goals? So, for example, to prevent additional requirements or changes at the end of a cleanup program?
I would say that's why we're saying focus on communicating with each other, working together early, because there isn't, unless you're planning ahead, there aren't really specific measures. And Monica, correct me if I'm wrong, that ensure that consensus. You have to have the working relationships, present those topics and have those conversations early and frequently throughout the process. Or you'll end up in disagreement at the very end of your cleanup, where perhaps one program doesn't believe that its needs have been met through the cleanup. And that's, you know, you don't want to be there.
Right. I agree.
Okay. This again, getting back to federal facilities and five-year reviews. Okay.
this is a topic. I know we had a webinar on five-year reviews. And I know these are great questions, and if we need to do it again or add something to it, we certainly will do that. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Jean, I'm sorry.
No, sure. This one, it is, what if the federal facility is not an NPL site? So they want to know, what is EPA's role in that five-year review process?
So EPA, their role is pretty much doesn't exist unless we are asked by the state or the community to be involved. And that's what the 2001 five-year review guidance talks about. So our role for non-NPL sites really doesn't exist unless we're asked by the state or the communities to get involved.
Okay. Okay.
And do I sound better now? Sorry,
you do.
I was drifting off. Apologies.
You do. Okay. Well, I think that is exactly what I think we're getting notes that that's what they were referencing. So they thank you for that. And I don't see any other questions here in the queue. So I'll just give the audience one more moment here if they want to type something in. And if you don't have any questions, that's also equally helpful. So if you have no questions for our speakers, go ahead and put that in the Q&A window and let us know. Otherwise, if you do have a question, this is your last chance to get those in before we move on to some of our final reminders here. And we did do a session while I'm waiting to see if any other questions come in, Monica, like you said, where the focus was five-year reviews. So maybe that could be a helpful resource. I will point everybody to our archive page here in just a moment where you can find the previously recorded ones and you can replay that five-year review class or session that we do have recorded from earlier in the session. All right. So I do see two more questions that came in. So, and I think that this is similar to topics that you've talked a bit about on other sessions. Oh, but this one's good. This is about FFAs. How about this one? Okay. A placement on the NPL does not preempt state enforcement, and therefore states may enforce their hazardous waste laws at CERCLA sites. And they go on to ask, even if the state has signed the FFA? Yes. Is that true? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then our next question, you said for at NPL sites, EPA has the final say, but how does this work with the DOD?
You mean the final say regarding remedy selection?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. I mean, yes, it works with, it doesn't matter whether it's Department of Defense or Department of Energy or any federal agency.
Section 120 of CERCLA talks about the fact that EPA is the final decision maker in the remedy selection process. And again, we don't jelly, you know, we want to work together. We don't want to make those decisions alone. We want to be able to reach a consensus, because we know by working together and by communicating, we know that that's the best process. We know that process works. We know through the partnering process that we know that works. We know we are able to, by using that process, we are able to save money, and we're able to get these sites cleaned up on a faster pace. We know that for a fact. So we don't want to make those decisions on our own. We want to work with the other federal agencies and the state such that we can reach a consensus on what would be the best remedy for that particular area of concern or that operable unit.
One other way I would say that is you cannot have a record of decision without EPA signature. DOD could sign it, or DOE or whatever federal agency can sign. But if EPA doesn't sign that document, it is not a cleanup decision for the site. You need EPA to approve that final cleanup decision or remedy selection at a site.
Okay.
And I've had some of my partners on site teams say, oh, well, we're just going to go forward without you. No, you're not, because you can't, because this is federal facility NPL site and we're using CERCLA. So there might be some misunderstanding on the team. So knowing how that process works is really important, because it might change the tone of some conversations that you're having.
And as Emmy said before, we know when we get into disputes or disagreements, we know that takes up time, that takes money, and we know that the work is not being done at a site. So we really want to be able to work with our federal partners in our state to get, you know, to come to a to come to a decision together on what the remedy should be.
Okay. And so some of the questions that I see coming in here are just about how various states compare in cleanup programs, or questions about abandoned mine sites, and some more specific questions. I think really what the best use of our time might be, Emmy and Monica, is just to remind the audience that they can reach out to any of you directly to ask their questions. They can shoot you all an email, some of their follow-on questions, or call you if they'd like to discuss some of these items. Is that correct?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I think with just a few minutes left, I'll go ahead and move to our closeout reminders, but I wanted to make sure, Emmy, anything that you want to cover before I do that?
No, just a big thank you to everyone who participated today. We really appreciate it.
All right. Great. So
thank
with
you.
With that, let me go ahead and turn on a screen share and take back control. And let me walk the audience through just a few final reminders as we get ready to close things out today. So as we started at the very beginning, if you were not here at the start of the class, I just want to remind everybody that this is part of an ongoing series. So we are right here on the July 11th date with the RCRA CERCLA integration session, and we will carry on August 10th with our next Federal Facilities Online Academy session on groundwater policy overview. So we hope that you will join us. And as was noted, the very first session we did in the series was on five-year reviews. So that took place on February 9th, and you can find that on our archive on CLUIN. So I will remind everybody that you can visit us at CLUIN, and you can also look for icons that will allow you to subscribe to our monthly newsletter, like Tech Direct, which highlights free webinars like today's session, which we push out on the first of each month. And for those of you who are looking for copies of the presentation materials, we have those posted in something that's known as the student manual. So if you head over to the URL shown in red here, this is the seminar homepage. It will be active from today forward. It's the same page you went when you registered. It's the same place you went when you checked in to get here for today's live class. And it is the same place that you can go to access presentation materials, find our speakers' information, contact details, as well as to provide feedback. The only thing I will point out is that you may need to scroll up and down on that page to find the appropriate section, but you'll find a section called Webinar Slides and References where you can download the presentation materials in that participant manual. And I will ask each of you to take a moment to fill out the online feedback form. Again, it's linked and available on the seminar homepage that I just showed you under a feedback section. For those of you who are looking to get a participation certificate, you must fill out that online feedback form in order to receive one of those certificates. So simply follow the link over to that form, fill out the feedback form, making sure that you check the box at the bottom certifying you were here for the entire session. Then once you submit the feedback form, you should have immediate access to either download or print out a participation certificate like the one here on the screen. We will also attempt to email a copy to you, but depending on your email settings, it may get flagged as junk. Sometimes your email addresses are incorrectly listed, so it bounces back. So it's always a good idea to download or print out that certificate as soon as you see it pop up on the screen after filling out feedback. If you happen to share a spot with multiple parties, I'll simply ask each of those of you who register to get this URL to the seminar homepage and direct your colleagues to fill out the feedback form there so that they can get their own participation certificate, even if they didn't register to attend individually. With that, I'll remind everybody that the seminars were recorded. Today is just like the others in the series, and it'll be posted on the seminar archived webinar page. So if you visit us at cluin.org, you should see links along the top, which will allow you to navigate to our archived webinar collection. I will also email each and every one of you as soon as the recorded version of today's session is available for on-demand playback, and you'll be welcome to share it with a colleague if you think that they'll find it useful to watch. So with that, I want to thank all of our presenters, all of our organizers, and all of our attendees who joined us from all over the U.S. for today's live session. We'll go ahead and formally conclude today's live broadcast. Thank you so very much for joining us.